For me, I think cute is an aesthetic phenomenon that can be so many different things.
They're a mix of extremely sacred and kitsch tat, queer holy items.
Welcome to The Process Archive, a way of revisiting and reimagining part of the Somerset House audio archives. Across each episode, we will use the archive as a stepping stone to explore the connections between podcasts, audio work or broadcasts, past and present, within the cultural program and creative community. This time, we dive into an archive process episode with musician Hannah Diamond on the transformative potential of cute. We invited artist and audio describer Dot Alma, whose work is currently part of the Holy Pop exhibition at Somerset House, to reflect on this episode. What parallels might they find in their own work? And what is the world-building potential of pop culture? Dot reflects on which ideas sparked inspiration for them when listening.
My name is Dot Alma. I'm an audio describer and artist, and I've currently got a piece at Somerset House in the Holy Pop exhibition. So the Holy Pop exhibition is kind of an exploration of both personal shrines and also like fandom of kind of like mainly pop culture icons. So it is kind of exploring that kind of like fine line of how we worship these people and like what that means on like a secular level, and then like the fandom behind it as well. It was so great when I got invited to be part of it, because I was like, this is exactly what my shrine is. The name of the piece is Our Father Figure, Who Art in Heaven, the nightclub. And it is a like personal and community shrine dedicated to George Michael. And as part of that shrine, there is also a audio sound piece, which has integrated audio description of what the shrine looks like, but also contains like music and sound and interviews from people that I've interviewed around their kind of connection to George Michael.
I don't think I'd ever had an experience where actually there was this just public display of joy, communion and celebration in a cruising ground, you know.
Oh, wow. Such a strong, incredible presence of gayness, of queerness, that confidence. I would like a little bit of that in my life.
A lot of it is around how reverence for him parallels the reverence that we have for saints as like a religious experience. And like he is a queer folk saint. So in terms of folk sainthood being saints that are not canonized by the Catholic Church. But yeah, I revere him as a queer folk saint. And I think that George Michael connects like me to other people. Like when you have a particular saint who you revere, that can connect you to other people in like a religious experience. And I think even when people aren't necessarily queer themselves, their connection to George Michael can be very queer, and then their connection to other people can be queer as well. So even if they don't necessarily identify like as a queer person. The whole point of like revering, like for me anyway, a point of revering like George Michael or having, you know, this worship and connection is to like encourage me to present and be the best version of myself. So I listened to Hannah Diamond's Process episodes, Felt Cute Might Shapeshift Later, and it's on the transformative potential of cute. And I think there were definitely some themes and ideas that felt in relation to and stood out for me in terms of when thinking about my piece, Our Father Figure, Who Art in Heaven, a Nightclub. I think there was a few bits that I was like, ooh, around cuteness being inherently femme. I found that really interesting because I heavily lean on camp in some of my work, and that has a connection to femness. Also, like, I don't know, I also identify as like camp butch, or maybe I'm just a wannabe butch, but also I think there is an element of femness to it, and therefore it gets like so many things that are femme, there is like a misogyny against it. And so I wonder if that is connected, like almost like the connection to campness and connection to cuteness, and around there being a femme element, and then again around there being perhaps some misogyny surrounding that, and like a discreditation which I think there is a bit of a discreditation sometimes of like campness, and then there is also a bit of a discreditation of like cuteness as like as a concept or on something that can be applied artistically. I have a real line between like silliness and campness, but also being deeply earnest with it at the same time, like holding both of those things in two hands. Like you can have like playfulness and earnestness as one. When people view it, sometimes people think that it's inauthentic, and it doesn't have to be. I think sometimes when people hear me say like, oh, I have a shrine to George Michael, they think it's like a bit tongue-in-cheek, and I'm like, yes, but I also do like deeply revere him as a queer saint. The whole point of like revering, like for me anyway, a point of revering like George Michael or having, you know, this worship connection is to like encourage me to present and be the best version of myself. Thinking about pop and pop culture as an art form, it can be construed as like either lowbrow, or it can be construed as homogenous, or like it can kind of be dismissed of like, this isn't, I don't know, like serious, it's not serious, or it's not art. I just think like pop, like art and performance and music can be like deeply, deeply political as well, as much as anything else. Like it can be quite an accessible art form. In a pop song, you can communicate something in like 3 minutes, and that can be kind of written, built, recorded quite quickly. And then the way that it can be distributed as well can make it an incredibly accessible like art form. And I feel the same around like pop culture in terms of like communicating ideas. Finding joy in that artificial nature of something, and to think about how like the lens of which I could look at that through with my own work. I think of like my own shrine and how it is just absolutely like covered in rhinestones, like regardless of whether things needed rhinestoning, they were. And it kind of lifts these very ordinary everyday objects into something like into something quite different. And I'm like, I've literally like just stuck rhinestones on it. But like, you know, in a way where I'm like, and it's now this completely different object, but there is something quite joyous about it as well. I used to do drag, and I come from like a drag, like nightlife background as well. And like about how rhinestones are on everything, and it transforms these everyday costumes and objects into something like quite, like something really joyous and something quite silly, and the way as well that it kind of ends up playing with identity so much. And yeah, that's something that I just find quite inspiring and something that I'd really like to kind of explore and continue with my work.
As Dot was saying, people can be quick to dismiss cuteness. But artifice doesn't automatically mean inauthentic. What if cute was a superpower that could shapeshift and transform your reality in the world? Up next, our 2024 process episode, Felt Cute Might Shapeshift Later, with artist and musician Hannah Diamond.
I think when you can't pinpoint what something is, you can't help but underestimate it.
What is cute? Kittens?
My dog Reggie.
Babies?
Hello Kitty.
Big-eyed pastel manga characters of some description?
Pink bows. Ribbons.
We sometimes assume cute things are mute, powerless, and a bit throwaway. But dig under the surface, and cute can be a lot more than an aesthetic. What if cute was a superpower? A power to shapeshift, change form, and create your own reality in the world.
For me, I think cute is an aesthetic phenomenon that can be so many different things.
As part of the music collective PC Music, artist and musician Hannah Diamond has been playing with digital identity, cuteness, and girlhood for the last 10 years.
My relationship with cute has been somewhat similar to a best friend that you fall out with from time to time.
Hannah was commissioned by Somerset House to create her own girls' sleepover world, The Cute, an exhibition exploring the irresistible force of cuteness in contemporary culture.
I wanted to invite anyone to be a girl on my corner of the internet for a while and explore the sounds and visuals of my world.
Cute has exploded into pop culture over the last decade. mainly due to the internet and its obsession with animals. But beyond the memes, the line between our digital avatars and our real selves is becoming increasingly blurred.
We can still like look at an image and be like, that is a cute image, but I think we have started also seeing ourselves as the image.
In this episode, Hannah goes down an internet wormhole to try to understand why the online world is so obsessed with cute, and how both cuteness and pop music can have an alchemical power for self-transformation.
So for me, cuteness is really an exploration of like the maximalist, or pushing something to its complete limit. Like Hello Kitty for me is a character designed but pushed to its complete like minimalist elements. But at the same time, she's been transformed into this completely like maximalist icon that's completely taken over the world. You know, I think pop music is kind of like that too. I've always tried to distill the things I liked about pop music in the most minimalist way, but at the same time, push it to its most extreme and make it super maximalist. And I think I do the same with my visuals as well. Like I take the aesthetic of like commercial, like advertising images, and I push them to their most extreme. Yeah, I don't know, that's something that I see mirrored in cuteness. I think a lot of people hear my music and just directly associate it with cuteness because of the way that my voice sounds. But I think that's quite a one-dimensional way to look at it. For me, it's about the way that I play with perfection and imperfection in the way that my vocals are produced. Every night might be a good one. The vocals are really cute and the lyrics are very like sweet and sentimental, and they're really like offset by these extreme kind of like hard stabby synths. I know you like the way that I look, and it looks like I like you too. You know I do. I think that cuteness is inherently femme, personally. I also think that it doesn't have to be. Cute can be really punk and really hard and aggressive, and then at the same time it can be really soft and fluffy. I don't know, we can unpick this and try and figure out what cute is forever, but it seems like it's going to be continuously shape-shifting and changing. Every time the light hits you, a photograph is never true to life. Sometimes it's hard to live up to the perfect life. In this podcast, I'm really interested in exploring the transformative and shape-shifting nature of cute, as well as its ability to help us transform ourselves and build new worlds in both online and offline spaces. So I wanted to ask, why is the internet so obsessed with cute? And what does that say about culture and where we're at right now?
Hello, my name is Gonzalo Alchinkaya. I am a writer, researcher and the features editor at Days Magazine.
I wanted to catch up with journalist Gonzalo, who basically knows everything there is to know about the internet and cuteness.
Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web, when he was asked to name one use of the internet that he didn't anticipate, he answered kittens. I think that really sums it up.
I asked her for a whistle-stop history of the internet's obsession with cute.
For as long as the internet has existed, cuteness has always been a part of it. Kawaii was a thing in Japan, gaining traction in the 90s. And you see a lot of the early adopters of the internet would be into Japanese manga and anime. I'd say one of the earliest examples is Nightcore, which kind of emerged around 2002. Its only real defining factor is that it's just like sped up music. Some people call it chipmunk music. Caramella Girls, that was like this amazing video that it's like three anime girls kind of dancing along. They kind of have like little cat ears. shortly followed by Nyan Cats. Cats are a kind of running theme, I think, with internet and cuteness. Maybe one of the most obvious, I guess, Uwu. So Uwu, instead of like putting down like say a smiley face, you would put down Uwu, which is like the U, little U, big W, little U, to just be a cuter version of a smiley face.
Sorry, I don't talk in a Uwu voice. I don't know what you expected me to do.
There was an example last year that went viral of a gamer doing the Uwu sound, like blush across their face, like freckles. You essentially cutify your face to kind of resemble like an anime girl in some ways.
Uwu? No! I taught one.
But that particular clip just went viral.
Uwu?
We're kind of expanding into these cute characters, the artificial, and I think you see a lot of overlap with the kind of thinking behind PC music with that as well.
So PC music was a label that I was a part of for the last 10 years. It started as a collective of friends all making music under the same kind of like ethos and with similar goals about building new worlds. And it was very character-based, I guess, in a way, based on everybody's individual personalities and characters and figuring out how to amplify those to be the most extreme expression, the pop star version of that person.
I know you like the way that I look, and it looks like I like you too. You know I do. I like the way you know that I like how you look, and you like me too. I know you do. I see you.
So much of this project and just PC in general, I think, has to do with ruptures.
Hayden Dunham has been a very, very best friend of mine for 10 years. They are a multidisciplinary artist and they are the brains behind Hey Cutie.
Hey Cutie!
Which was a pop song collaboration between Hayden, Sophie and AG Cook around 2014. It was not just a pop song, it was also an energy drink. It was a feeling, it was something that could be shared between friends.
Hey Cutie!
I think that transformative and shape-shifting nature is what really makes this song so connected to the subject of cuteness.
It started with a word, cutie. That was a word that I started using, writing to Sophie as a message. Hey cutie, that's so cutie. You're being very cutie right now. She started calling me cutie and I started calling her cutie, and cutie became an amorphous space that we would meet in.
Hayden hasn't spoken about this project very much publicly. So I really wanted to take this opportunity to really talk about this project and tell us how it started, where it came from, and also how they feel about it now.
I mean, the very beginning, I had been making these grounding elixirs, and I would make it also for Sophie. This was early on, maybe we had just started dating. That just continued and pushed into what would happen if that energy were to be distilled into a liquid that you could drink and trade and share. But really so much of the origin of Hey Cutie was in this feeling of being with someone who you can't see, but who you feel their presence with you. You know, when someone can extend beyond the physical form. So it's something that started as a word.
Hey Cutie, yeah, there's something I want to say.
And then it
say,
ended
say,
in a world.
Yeah, I just think that's so inherently connected to just ideas of like cuteness aesthetics anyway. We've been talking a lot with this show about how it can really take many forms. Like on the one hand, like fluffy kittens and a very naturalistic idea of like what cuteness is. And then on the other side of the spectrum, it can be completely maximalist, completely plastic, and completely change its form and the materials that it's made of to become something completely different. It's continuously shape-shifting.
I'd say Hey Cutie really taps into the transformative power of cuteness, in that
Hey Cutie Hayden is both the star and the energy drink. At the same time, when you look at cuteness, there's a lot of like polarities there. And I think that interplay is what's really great about cuteness and what really kind of defines it in a way. But at the same time, it's quite violent and aggressive as well. Like the phrase, it's so cute, I could eat it, or I want to squeeze it. It's both sharp and smooth. It's hard and soft. It's object and subject. What I find and what I love about cuteness is that it is changing like the kind of ways that we see ourselves. Like one way to see this that I find particularly helpful. So there's a new book coming out on Urbanomic called Cute Accelerationism. And they talk about how cuteness is belonging to a post-truth world. Not in a fake news sense, but more in terms of body and gender and the embodied self. We need to look at ourselves and reconstitute ourselves in terms of like a new type of identity that kind of goes beyond like pre-held ideas of the body and gender. And again, there's a lot of overlap to PC music with like queerness and almost like the joyous like artificiality of that kind of sound. But I think what Hey Cutie does is really kind of merge the idea of cuteness and consumerism. I think it was one of the first times that this had been really kind of communicated through pop music in a very self-aware way.
Yeah, I think all of us were really fascinated by branding and this almost like seemingly approaching self-brandification of the internet. And I think that slowly sort of developed into this appreciation and fascination for the synthetic. And I wanted to chat to Hayden to see about how they think that plasticity comes into play within PC music and pop music in general.
For me, it was really exciting working in the pop sphere because you could materialize things and transfer really complex ideas into very distinct sound bites. So something that I had been working on, because I had been working in sculpture, large scale installations, you know, it would take an incredible amount of materials to communicate something. Whereas with a song, you could do it in 3 minutes and then transfer it globally. It was incredibly accessible and easy to exchange and transmute. So that aspect was really enticing to me. And then also that you could do really complex world building through these really simple forms.
That's so true. I mean, I got really emotional the other day because when I first came to see the show, I realized how much of these dreams that we started building 10 years ago have become such a part of our reality. And it made me realize how important, like, even imaginary world building is in order to change your physical space around you.
100%. Yep.
And to me, this idea of like world building and creating something that literally gives you the space to be able to transform. I didn't know that that was possible before I met you, before I met Sophie, before I met AG.
Yeah, and also what happens in cross-pollination. There's something about this that I think is so powerful right now while we're in this landscape that is very rough terrain, to be able to hold a vision beyond what can be seen right now.
Yeah. Thinking back to 2013, when we all first started releasing music on PC Music, I think the landscape was very different. Electronic music at that time was like a very like masculine owned space, and it was super interesting coming forward with this extremely cute and hyper femme aesthetic sound into this extremely like hard masculine space. There was a lot of criticism from press, there was a lot of misunderstanding,
a lot of people just being generally quite confused as to whether what we were making was satire or if it was ironic, which I think for a lot of us was really annoying and for some of us quite painful.
I think A.T. Cook has for a long time been cast as this Svengali figure over PC music, and I think there had been early criticisms where people had said that, you know, hey cutie, Hannah, like they don't really have any agency surrounding things. It's just like A.G. Cook's there like pulling the strings or whatever. Like obviously untrue. but I think the reason that there had been so much like early speculation surrounding this, like I guess cuteness in its ways, like, okay, yeah, by nature it's deceptively innocent. So I think maybe people took that too literally and just saw that as a lack of agency. Whereas I think what Hannah and Hey Cutie did, it was like a really kind of clever play on that idea of cuteness as an innocent thing, as a deceptively cute thing.
What are some things that people got wrong about your project?
The first had to do with agency. I think that people were very confused about it and wanting to really put it into a really flat, two-dimensional form. Something that people would say a lot is that I was the face of the project, quote-unquote, which was really kind of disturbing and weird for me. And I learned a lot, and I think we both learned a lot from that, Hannah. I don't know, confusion and disorientation is really exciting to me in a project. Like, if someone doesn't fully understand something, like, that's exciting to me. But it was very difficult to keep it mutable, to keep it in this in-between zone. People were really resistant towards that.
Yeah, that's so true. I think that especially then too, 10 years ago, I think a lot of people had way more binary ideas of what things should be. Even when it comes to simple things like what genre a piece of music is, it was like, well, this isn't pop, this is electronic, or this is this. And it, like, nothing could be somewhere in between, nothing could be both. I think that comes down to plasticity again, and thinking that plasticity equals disingenuous self-representation, when actually for us, representing us in this artificial, self-built, world-building, all of these like really magical forms was really the purest form of expression that we could come up with.
I deeply agree.
If you look at when these tracks emerged, it was in around like the 2013 time. That was when Instagram first became a thing. The idea that you created your own digital like identity was so foreign, whereas now it's so commonplace to be like, our digital selves are like these fantasy creatures that we project onto our screens. Back then, you know, we had Facebook's real name policy. We can still like look at an image and be like, that is a cute image, but I think we have started also seeing ourselves as the image. We're necessarily like turning ourselves into objects, these kind of artificial synthetic objects for consumption. You know, we put on a face filter, it enlarges our eyes, it like, we put on cat ears, kind of speak in higher pitched voices. Like, this is all stuff that we're seeing online, and that's necessarily going to feed back to inform our like away from keyboard, our IRL selves. I mean, there's lots of surgeries and like that you can do where people are literally cutifying their faces in like the physical form, changing the proportions of your face so that your eyes appear larger. It's an indicator of the kind of growing effects that two-dimensional images are having.
Yeah, and I think that's, for me, that's something that feels especially true, especially with being a musician or like publicly facing artist. I think that one thing that keeps coming up for me recently is my work the work or am I the work? It's harder to distinguish now if what I'm making is the product or if I am the product.
Picture perfect. It's the way we click, click, click. Yeah. gets in the way.
And so I guess beyond that, I wanted to ask, what is going on with pop culture right now that, you know, is leading to all of this kind of stuff?
What's really interesting about the kind of extreme aspects of cuteness is also how it relates to our current kind of culture of like super flatness. People have said that pop culture has become homogenized at the moment. Like the TV shows we watch, the fashion we wear, like it seems like everything is the same, same, but different. And I think in a way, the reason, one of the reasons why cuteness is such a big thing right now in like the kind of online age is because it's such a response to kind of the algorithmic midness that we're seeing kind of play out. And obviously a reason for that is like, you know, on social media, the algorithm does promote certain microtrends, certain trends that kind of flatten the way that we communicate with each other. So one exciting way that we can use cuteness is the kind of subversive, transgressive side of it to then question this like language of consumerism that is so prevalent and flat and bland.
Looking back over the last 10 years and stuff, I'm actually so like overwhelmed and so proud of how we stuck with this and how we fought through this like extremely hostile environment. And I'm so proud that we managed to basically create a much more queer electronic music scene. And it's probably one of my proudest achievements. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I feel the same.
It's something that I wished I always had.
Me too.
And we basically made that possible.
Well, this is also what can happen when you can't see a space that exists and you have to make your own. We were circulating a message. There was something planted in the music. There was something planted in the visuals, something planted in the videos. It's interesting thinking about it in terms of also plastic or like armor, having a proxy to create behind and within allowed me to be more vulnerable than I could be in my original version of myself. That was such a tender space. I really needed a kind of armature that I created to be able to go into these deeper parts of myself.
Or if we're thinking about like plastic, like it's like ability to like be completely stretched to its limits, be twisted, flipped inside out, expanded, and how much power that has. But just going back to like the proxy thing, I think you're so right about having this kind of like armored self that you are then able to explore like an even more truer, like deeper form of your identity through. And that's like really the case for me too. I don't remember if, I'm sure you remember when we first met, what a different person I was 10 years ago. I was extremely shy. But like I had a really hard time speaking to people most of the time. And there were times in that period where like I was potentially selectively mute just out of like complete fear and learning all of these kind of like tools about like identity building, world building, and I think saved me, to be honest.
I love thinking about that version of HD of Hannah Diamond, like 1.0, 2.0, 5.0.
Like the first show when it looked like I was singing karaoke.
Yeah.
Because I was so shy. I guess to kind of pseudo quote Sophie here, but we really made our insides the outsides, you know?
Yeah.
We took something that is ephemeral.
Yeah.
And we made it real.
It's true.
Cuteness allows us to play with what's real and what's fake. One thing I find super interesting is the fantasy aspect, and especially that how that fantasy is feeding into our kind of quote-unquote realities. Like, I really like to think of cuteness as its own kind of psychedelic realm of sorts. And like, instead of trippy tie-dye and crystals, you have sparkly hearts and emojis. But I think the core idea is really similar. I think as the kind of boundaries between reality and fantasy are kind of
blurring increasingly. The way that we see ourselves, our online identities, and our offline identities is being increasingly informed by fantasy and by our own imaginations. Like, we get to create our own realities.
If there's one thing I've learned, is that what you manifest and what you put out online in terms of the worlds that you build can become very real. And I think that's what's the most exciting thing about Q. This idea that you can create your own reality, or that you can become anything that you want to be. You know, if we're looking into like the future of like what humanity can be and stuff, I think that we can learn like a lot of lessons from what cuteness is and how it moves in the world.
I'm Laurent John, and you've been listening to The Process Archive, a space where artists within the current Somerset House community get a chance to look at their work through the lens of our sonic archives. In this episode, we were joined by artist Dot Alma as they shared their reflections on Hannah Diamond's episode for The Process on cuteness. The executive producer was Eleanor Ritter Scott. The producer was Tess Davidson. Theme music by Car Beard. The Holy Pop exhibition runs from the 21st of May to 9th August 2026. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.